Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris. Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller. That's when it got wheels off. We started on, we ain't gonna stop. Oh, she made me feel like a god. That's when it got wheels off. Shelley Mazzanoble and Greg Tito have a new book called Dragon Talk, inspiring conversations about Dungeons and Dragons and the people who play it. It is inspired by the interviews they've done for their Dragon Talk podcast, which is part of their jobs that they hold at Wizards of the Coast, the company that makes, you guessed it, Dungeons and Dragons. I myself am a big D&D fan. I've played it since I was a little kid in the 1980s. I continue to play it to this day, and I think that it is in such a great place as a pastime, as an art form, as a community. That's a word that you're going to hear a lot in this conversation with Shelley and Greg. The Dungeons and Dragons community is vibrant and inclusive and cool and fun, and I think it's so great that they have figured out a way to make a book that's going to convey a lot of wisdom under the auspices of talking about Dungeons and Dragons. And that's what we do during this interview. I talk about their own paths. I talk about what they've learned from their work with D&D and their interviews with Dragon Talk. This will be a bit of an unorthodox Wheels Off, as if they aren't all unorthodox. But this one will break the format a little bit because there's two guests, because we're sort of talking about a book of interviews rather than songs, poetry, stand-up comedy, whatever maybe is a more normal Wheels Off conversation, but it's all right there. It's all part of the same creative process. And Shelley and Greg have worked really hard and have been really inspired in their pursuit of making something great. And it's resulted in this new book, Dragon Talk. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. As I mentioned at the very end of this episode, at the beginning of the Wheels Off run 2.5 years ago, I interviewed Chris Perkins, the lead storyteller, the head honcho over there at Dungeons & Dragons. That's a great interview and super fun. If you are D&D inclined, I encourage you to go back and find that one. But in the meantime, here's a great conversation I was lucky to have with Shelley and Greg. Please welcome to Wheels Off, Shelley Mazzanoble and Greg Tito. Thank you. Welcome to Wheels Off, Greg Tito and Shelley Mazzanoble. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Yes.
Thank you for having both of us here.
I know, right? And for the edification of our listeners, from where are y'all joining in?
We are, like, with our actual location.
Yeah, the actual address. Just kidding. No,
my address is. We are both calling, like, actually only from a mile apart from each other in lovely West Seattle, Washington. Just a neighborhood, just a little bit west of downtown Seattle.
And that's pretty near the WotC headquarters.
Yeah, we're about 20 minutes from our offices, but our offices have really been right here in our homes for the last couple of years.
So I've gotten to go to the Wizards of the Coast headquarters where, among other things, Dungeons and Dragons is created. It's really big and beautiful. Has it been pretty empty since the pandemic kicked in?
Yeah. Yeah. There's some people that are in there. I go in maybe a couple times a month just to visit Mitzi, our lobby dragon, because I feel like she's lonely and I just want to say hello and make sure she's okay.
Wow. There are folks who, you know, go there on a more regular basis. Obviously, I think playtesting games like Magic the Gathering and stuff like that, it's a little bit easier to do when you're, safely doing it in the same area. But for the functions that me and Shelley do, it makes a lot more sense just to be able to do meetings and stuff like this. And we've been doing all of the production of our podcast, Dragon Talk, from home since March 2020, which is kind of amazing to think about.
And having appeared on there, I remember you guys were once in like a proper studio together. Yes. Well, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It really does. That's so long ago.
But isn't it so? I know for this Wheels Off podcast, I used to have to go to people's homes and like put a clip-on mic on their lapel. And now it's so much easier. But I'm really grateful because I would not otherwise be able to be in Seattle with y'all right now. And so this is great.
Yeah.
And you've been on tour in places around my old haunts in Connecticut.
Yes. I was just at a very drunken gig in New Haven, Connecticut at Cafe 9, the historic old punk rock club.
Oh,
that's
nice.
That's so awesome. Hopefully you didn't expose yourself like many folks do in New Haven.
Is that a thing?
I only remember that from the Doors movie, where Jim Morrison was arrested in New Haven for public exposure. So as long as you didn't do that, drunken club sounds great in New Haven.
Yeah, that's right. I'd forgotten that was the famous gig. I've interviewed for Wheels Off both of the surviving members of the Doors, and they both brought up that New Haven incident. Now that you bring it up, so now you're the third person. You're like the Jim Morrison.
I think you got to do it. I think that's what the universe is telling you here.
All right. Thank God it'll be another year before I go back there. So I know that I imagine that the answer to this question has to do with this fantastic new book that you guys are about to drop. I wonder if you could tell me what creative project it is you're working on at the moment and how does it light y'all up?
Yes. Well, like you said, we have a book releasing next month in December. It's called Welcome to Dragon Talk, Inspiring Conversations about Dungeons and Dragons and the People Who Love to Play It. And it's very exciting. And it's a book about the Dragon Talk podcast and some of the people that we've had the pleasure of getting to know and to talk to and the ways in which they have inspired us. And the creative ways that maybe they're using Dungeons and Dragons or the ways that D&D has lit them up in ways and have helped fuel their creative endeavors as well. So I think just for me, getting to talk to these extremely passionate, inspiring people every single week that just are there to talk about the ways in which the job that I get to come to every day is like fueled their passion and like, you know, given them the sense of purpose or a sense of community or a sense of identity and has really shaped them in very profound ways. It's incredibly gratifying. So I love it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I wonder about this because I've got a couple of teenage kids. As you've been doing this, how much do you think that it's infiltrated? Because my impression is that it's a lot. The sort of younger demo that are coming up now, the teenagers of this weird modern world.
That's good. Well, if we have anything to do with it, a lot. It will be a lot. We're definitely seeing a shift in that there's D&D is starting to skew a little bit younger. What I find interesting, and maybe you can speak to this as the father of teenagers, but I have a 9-year-old and his friends are aware of Dungeons and Dragons. And like, we're not actively at this. Well, now we sort of are, but before then we weren't actively like, you know, talking to them about Dungeons and Dragons, but they know it exists. And I don't know if it's just the words Dungeons and Dragons that get them excited, but there is like this awareness and this curiosity. And even though they're all on their devices and they all have this instant gratification before them and like YouTube and just like constantly scrolling through videos and like not interested. So I'm going to get rid of this and go on to the next and the next and next. There is something really satisfying to them to sit down face to face and just talk and tell stories. And it's like, after nearly 50 years, this game still has that hold and like, and that ability to really engage with kids and well, with adults too. But I'm especially excited about the way that it still speaks to the younger generation as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll just second that, and that I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and it was not quite so prevalent. Nope. there was a lot of people playing it. They didn't tell a lot of people they were playing because it was, something that would be, made fun of, to be quite honest. And now it's, let that freak flag fly as much as possible. And I am still surprised by it. I had sometimes students in journalism classes reach out to me as the communications manager of Dungeons and Dragons to get interviews. They're doing it for a class assignment. Usually it's not having to do with anything pretty high stakes. They just want to, get this assignment ready for their class. And I had one experience a few months ago where the student asking me was like, "Can you just tell me why every single person I know is playing Dungeons and Dragons right now on campus?" And I was like, "Well, did not know that it was quite that popular amongst that 18 to 22 year old, age range. But I mean, you tell me why. Like, that's amazing. I had no idea." And so there is this idea that there are more people playing than even you or I will interact with and kind of really understand. And I think that's great because it taps into exactly what Shelley was saying, that like that need to tell stories, to gather around, weekly, monthly, however, scheduling wise, you're able to make it happen, and share that bit, because it is something that is missing in other parts of society right now.
Well, I feel like there's such a flexibility in what you guys are doing there in terms of the content creation, even like Radiant Citadel that just came out. I feel like that really leans into like a big tent approach to D&D in terms of like all ages, diversity represented. I just think it's such a great way to take it's funny to call it a product because it's something that's just such a free floating, game out there. But that seems like something that y'all are leaning into as a company, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think we, and of Dragon Talk in particular, I think we have really thought about bringing as many people into that tent as possible. When Shelley and I started doing this regularly around 2015, when I started at Wizards of the Coast, she and I were not your typical D&D players even at that time. We did not kind of fit the mold. And I think the two of us talking and being well-rounded people who are, ex-theater majors and writers and I like sports. Shelley sometimes likes to talk about reality TV. We're not like, we're not the cookie cutter D&D fans. And we found really a lot of fun in bringing other people in who were also, like yourself, when we had you on, we were like, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe this amazing person who's been playing music forever and ever is also really into D&D and loves doing it." And so that's why it has changed the perception, I believe, slowly over time, since this podcast has been as regular as it's been on a weekly basis with more than, 400 episodes almost at this point, that we can show that you need to have... It enriches the D&D table when there are people of different backgrounds, of people who have different cultures, different stories, different, cultural notes to bring to the characters that they play. And that just makes it all better.
I love that what you guys are doing now with Wizards winds up being so journalistic in a way, right? You're sort of processing the community and showing it back to itself, or maybe showing it to people that are contemplating becoming members of the community. I wonder, for you, when it all started out, like when you were kids, did you imagine that this might be something like this might be a job that you would do? Was it ever on the table? Did you know really early that you would be writing a book about Dragon Talk, your podcast that you'd be making?
Short answer, no. Actually, no. And I am still surprised to this day that I am writing books about Dungeons and Dragons. As a kid, I did not play D&D. I really wish I did. I think that I would have been great at it. And I was exactly the kind of kid that would have gravitated towards it. But I did not play. I was not invited to play. I have been accused at least once of possibly making fun of the kids who did play. I don't have any recollection of that. I will not confirm nor deny that, although I do believe I confirm it in our book. But I was always writing. I loved writing. And so writing books, I had always aspired to do, but never in a million years would I have guessed that this would be my third book about Dungeons and Dragons. Still blows my mind, still to this day. But I love it. I find it to be a very fascinating subject. And I think the people who play this game are endlessly inspiring. So as long as it's out there, I can keep thinking of things to write about.
And we do talk about our origin stories a little bit in the book itself, because it provides a pretty good context. I did not think I would be necessarily writing about Dungeons and Dragons. I had always was a fantasy fan, different than Shelley, in that I loved The Hobbit animated film when it was first shown to me. I was probably like 4 or 5. My older brother had it on, and he was reading The Hobbit and telling me bits that were not in the adaptation. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then seeing the map, and that it was, for me, that it was drawn by the author, just, I was like, this is amazing. I can't wait to be in this world forever. So I just consumed as much fantasy as I possibly could at a young age. And then, pulling stuff off my brother's shelves, one of them was a Dungeon Master's Guide. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I started to thumb through that and see the artwork and all this, like, you know, very, very tiny text that was hard to kind of understand. But I did get that it was, oh, you can simulate being in this fantasy world. Like, this is my imagination come to life in some ways. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to play when I was young. My mother was a very Catholic mother, and once she realized what I was reading, she firmly got rid of it and discouraged me making friends with anybody who played Dungeons and Dragons at all. So it wasn't until college, after college, when I was living in New York, that I was like, hey, no one's telling me I can't play D&D right now. So I went out and formed a group, and you know, that was the moment where I was like, huh, this could be a career path, could be something I could do. And it started off by writing, you know, RPG material for, you know, fourth edition and trying to break in that way. And then writing about video games in the RPG sense was how I started, you know, kind of more professionally writing, which eventually led to me getting a job at Wizards. So it didn't really come into ever being a reality until I was already kind of an adult and could make those decisions.
So when you wrote this new book, obviously you both grappled a little bit with your own, as you say, origin stories. And I wonder, as you were deciding how much to divulge, and then even just as you were going through the process of writing this book, how did you deal with the decisions about what to, like, you must have felt a little vulnerable telling stuff about yourselves. And I wonder how you dealt with that, how you dealt with the sort of decisions about whether or not to let people in to see the trickier parts of you. Like, I wonder when it came to like the negative voices holding you back, what tricks have you guys figured out to get past those? Mm. That's a big question.
That is a big question. What do you think, Shelley?
I write a lot of nonfiction, even outside of D&D. And one subject that I'm very passionate about is parenting, and especially being a new mom, because I feel like there's a lot of things they don't tell you. And that experience for me becoming a mother was very difficult. And it was I was not prepared for the emotions that I would be feeling, for how unprepared I felt. And going into this with nobody telling me like, hey, it's totally normal. You're going to feel like crap a lot of the time. You're going to have some serious regrets about your life choices. You're not going to be good at this right away. You feel very, very alone, and like you're quietly failing because you don't want to admit these things. Like, they're going to take this kid away from me if people know how much I'm struggling, you know? And then I realized, as I was like coming out of this fog months and months later, everybody feels that way. And that made me so angry. So I went on this crusade to just be like, let's just be honest and let's just talk. And I think that vulnerability is a wonderful way to connect with people. And just, even if they haven't experienced the exact same thing, just seeing your genuine self and and honesty. And that's really a way to just bring people together. And I'm sure as a musician, you feel that when you're connecting with people through songs. We certainly connected with you through your poetry book, which I told you is still very much in rotation. But I just believe that if people want to pick up a book that I've written, if they want to read an essay that I wrote, then I owe that to them as a reader to just to be honest and to be vulnerable and to have that truth out there and just be like, this is what you get. And I hope that it connects with you in a way. And I hope you can take something away from that, because it just feels like that's the relationship that I want to have with people who are gracious enough to spend their time reading something that I'm putting out there.
I love that. I love the emphasis too that you place on honesty. That comes up so often in this as being like sort of the most valuable component of what we do as people who create things.
Yeah,
totally. And I think that's been a tenet of Dragon Talk from the beginning. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, that we've been pretty open about, you know, when we got into it, how we got into it, and how we don't necessarily, you know, have that cookie cutter experience as D&D players. So that was easy, I think, to drop into. And I actually took a cue a lot from Shelley as co-author of her voice. And a lot of that came from, I think, your nonfiction and writing about the parenting experience and that self-deprecating, but also extremely angry at the same time voice.
That underlying
is so funny to me. I know, it makes me laugh. You're very good at it. And so when I started to see the essays that Shelley was putting together for this book, I was like, okay, well, I obviously won't be the same, but I can get into that same kind of headspace and match that style. And I think it ended up being a really kind of, you know, powerful back and forth between the two of us by having our two points of view that kind of still felt unified in the voice, similar to the way the podcast is. But one thing that, you know, I was concerned about, maybe still am to a certain extent, is how much we talk about the growth of the D&D community and acknowledging the fact that it may have been crappy for some people in the 70s and 80s who weren't white men, to be honest, right? And so we were very clear about, like, we need to show that, you know, there were some bad experiences. We are, you know, that it happened, but that things have changed and shifted and grown over the course of, you know, five decades of people playing this game, that there is folks who, you know, have, you know, different color skin, different sexual orientations, different backgrounds, different, you know, coming from different cultures, not just, you know, United States or UK English speaking cultures, and how do we bring those in? And so I was, you know, it's a bit vulnerable to describe that as part of, you know, because in our day jobs, we're not quite so, mm-hmm. you know, able to speak as freely about some of those things. So in this book, we do talk about, you know, steps that we took both professionally and personally that you know, I'm really excited about, and I think were the right things to do. But, you know, there is a bit of vulnerability there to be like, okay, we had to show, you know, there were negative experiences that people had. It's not like D&D is a solve for all of the world's ills, but, you know, it's a journey, right? And I think that's the through line that is throughout this book, is showing, you know, this is where it started and this is where we are currently.
So I love that you've spoken to so many folks who grew up playing D&D, maybe, or maybe came to it late, but it's been a part of their lives, everybody that you talk to in the book. And I wonder, if you were to think back on those interviews, are there a lot of instances where people have gotten through difficult periods in their life by being a part of the community, by playing D&D?
Oh, yeah. Those are Absolutely. The ones that really get to us as well. We have written about a lot of those in here as well, but it's amazing, because to some people out there who've never played D&D, they're like, well, it's just a game. It's make-believe. You're just pretending to be elves and wizards. What's the big deal? But to so many people, this game really has given them the space to explore their identity. We've heard stories about people who have come out after playing Dungeons and Dragons, or who have resolved a question about their gender identity. People who have gotten through grief, people who have gotten through just other traumas that they're processing through playing D&D, through finding this community. We write about Jay Tallsquall, who's a wonderful, inspiring person in the community. He started the hashtag D&D Fitness And it was like this amazing revolution. I'm like, what is happening here? That's why we invited him on, because we were so excited to talk to him about how he has inspired this like entire community to be posting about their workouts, or people who have never worked out before are now rolling D4s and however many that, whatever that number that, that comes up on the diet, that's how many pushups you have to do today, you know, and using like your characters as inspiration for how you would work out. That's an amazing story. But through talking to him, we also learned about how he was coming to grips with his own orientation and had discovered that he is actually asexual, and being a part of the D&D community gave him the courage to really to show his true colors and to actually become a spokesperson and a representative of that community as well. So it's like, really, like, wow, we get to work every day on a game that's actually doing these things for people. And just it's truly mind blowing sometimes. So, yeah, it's doing good work.
It's fundamentally empowering. Dungeons and Dragons.
It really is
empowering.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another essay we have in here is from our experience in talking to Rufus Hound, who is a performer from the UK. And we didn't know what to expect going into that one either. We were like, oh, it was from a referral from a colleague of ours. I was like, oh yeah, he's going to be great. He's got a great story. And we're like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
You know, let's just talk to him. And we're taken on this journey that he had, because he was such a great storyteller and improviser in the interview with us. It was very little questions from me or Shelley, other than like the middle comments and laughs along the way, because he had this great way of telling the story to us and how he needed this game to learn something about himself. And he needed to have several, and it actually involved music. He created a song that his character was going to perform to the other characters to explain the loss of all of the pain and hurt that he had had, that his character had had over the course of what was going on. And then he realizes he himself was actually writing this ode to himself in order to tell him that he needs to get help in dealing with addictions and other things within his life. And he's in the middle of telling this story. He starts crying. We start crying. We are all like caught up in the fact that he needed this game to create different layers in order to, for his subconscious to tell him something that he needed to hear in a way that he would be, you know, accepting of that message. That is one of those essays that just kind of flew off the page for me. Cause I was like, I just want to kind of convey this story in the best way possible and show that this game that he had been wanting to play his entire life. He had said like, I've always wanted to, by his own admission. He said he wasn't smart enough to figure out how to turn, you know, a stack of books and some dice into a game. He needed to have someone else be the dungeon master for him and teach him how to do it and make it happen. But once he did, he found it so fulfilling that he was able to learn this great lesson about himself and kind of move on with his life from there. And that only came from playing D&D, which was mind boggling for us. We're like, what a great way to have that experience and then create a piece of art around that experience. And that's something that's also kind of a through line through many of these storytellers, is that they are creators in their own way in different disciplines. We had talked to Devin Rue, who creates maps as a cartographer, and how those are her way into the storytelling of Dungeons and Dragons. People who do cosplay or who write stories or authors in their own right, based on all the things. And that's another part that I just love about this community, is that it's all about finding ways to lift up your creative endeavors in the game and outside the game.
Boy, and just the idea, it's funny because I think there will be people that listen to this that have never been around D&D or folks who play D&D, and to hear it described as we have so often in the course of this conversation as a community, it really feels like that, right? It really feels like when you meet someone else that plays D&D, there's such a shared, I don't know, like almost a shared history, a shared knowledge of these other worlds, that it brings you together, and it's such a positive thing. And I feel like that's probably the biggest takeaway from your book, is going to be just this really sweet, positive world of people who are trying to build something together.
Totally. Yeah. And we think this book is good for those who might be listening, who are D&D curious, right? You might have seen it on Stranger Things or heard, you know, you talk about it or anybody else in your life say that they play and be like, huh, well, that seems kind of cool. I want to learn more. I think this book, probably better than picking up the Player's Handbook dry, is a really great introduction into what this community is and what it means, right? And have the context of 50 years of history around it too. We start off the book with like a little bit of, you know, a casual way of talking about it, but a history of like, here's where it began, here's where it started, here's how AD&D is different than third edition, is different than fourth, and then, you know, now of course where we are now in the fifth edition era. But like, I think this book is a great guide to folks who might want to join this community of people who just want to lift each other up.
Yeah, you know, you're going to get readers that are interested in one of the, you know, guests that you've interviewed or someone whose story you're telling in the book, and maybe they don't know anything about it. I love it. I think this will be such a sweet entryway for so many people.
I hope so.
So I wonder for you guys individually, I mean, you've both wound up with these really cool jobs, right? I think they're cool. I think
I do too. I agree.
There's a bunch of people in the world that would agree. So I wonder for you, if you were going to share some wisdom that you've accumulated over these years and you were to meet a 21-year-old version of yourself working in today's world, living in today's world, and this isn't necessarily job-related or personal, but just whatever pops into your head, what advice do you think you might give this 21-year-old version of yourself?
Oh, gosh. Do you have something, Greg? What popped into your head?
Yeah, I've been a lot of weird things in my life, in my career, right? I moved to New York and I became a theater carpenter right off the bat. I was building sets for shows on New York Theater Workshop and other downtown theaters, and then kind of moved into stage management and got tired of making other people's shows work. So gave that up to be a secretary. I was a secretary at financial institutions for a long time while I was doing my art. In the evenings, you know, I was doing stand-up comedy at that time. I was producing my own plays. And then that's when I started playing D&D. And the group that I talked about earlier, I ended up making a lot of professional connections with other people in that group who have gone on to, we wrote D&D books together. One works at Paizo now. Another one we produced a play with in downtown as well. Like, so we had all these weird, and it all kind of stemmed from that group. But the opportunity came, right? And so then when I moved to games journalism, that was really great. And I did that career for a little bit. And then I moved to doing on the other side, the PR side, when that opportunity came up. So what I'm trying to say is you can't really trace your career path. At least I didn't. I didn't know that I was going to go from A to B to C to D. But when I was always doing things and always putting my energy out there in the world creatively, that once the opportunity came, I had enough experience or the right connections or the right mindset to take those opportunities. And so that's whenever people ask me like, "Oh, how did you get this job? What's your career path? You know, how can I do what you do at Dungeons and Dragons?" I'm like, "I don't know. I got nothing. I'm just saying, do everything, you know, and that doesn't mean just, you know, scattershot, do everything you possibly can, but do the things that you're passionate about. Do the things that are speaking to you at that moment, because it's all learning. It's all going to give you the right tools that you're going to need when the opportunity strikes to potentially move up and do the next thing. So that's my big advice is to, you know, drink the potion when you have it. Don't wait for later.
It sounds like there was a lot of trusting your instincts and a lot of being brave in there.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it at the time. Yeah. Always. You know, it felt like I was very much like, oh no, am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Like there's a lot of self-doubt that went through all those things. But looking back, it was a little bit of like, yeah, no, you just got to jump. You got to jump when you can because that opportunity, you know, may not come again.
Funny, I sort of stepped on your line there, but I hope my producers hear it and pull it as a pull quote because I love that. Drink the potion when you have it. Don't waste it. That's really good. But not literal potions, kids.
That's for all those people who play, you know, JRPGs or whatever and then end up, finish the game with like 199 health potions or whatever.
Yeah.
You're like, you got to use them. You got to use them. They're meant to be there, to be used.
Yeah. I think we can learn a lot from our D&D characters as well. Mm. if we live your life like your character would. Like, they don't say no to adventure. They don't, like, somebody comes to them with a quest, you're like, hell yeah, let's go. And I think if I could go back to my 20s and have that mindset, then there would have been a lot more opportunities I would have taken. That there's a few regrets that I have there. And I think fear held me back, or just the idea of the unknown, and like, oh, I'm like overthinking. And it's like, no, just try it. Just do the thing. Don't worry about the steps that are so far in the future that they may not even happen. Just live your life like a D&D adventurer. Take the quest. Go explore. Sometimes you're going to take a path that's going to be a dead end. No bigs. Sometimes you're going to take a path that's going to result in a whole lot of treasure. And also keep your friends close. Have that support system like your D&D party would. Support each other. Be excited for other people's successes. Do not measure your own success against someone else's success. That is not how this works. And just be an adventurer.
I love that. Although yes. I'm thinking right now about a certain tiefling warlock in my group that I wouldn't. I hope he doesn't live like his character in real life, because he's straight up murder hobo.
Oh yeah. Really take a good look at your D&D character before you decide to emulate their lives. Funny. I also have a character that was a tiefling warlock, not a murder hobo, but I probably wouldn't. She probably wouldn't be the life that I would walk in.
She's flirting with the dark side.
Maybe even like a little more than flirting. Like in a relationship with, I'd say. Oh,
no. A committed relationship with the dark side.
Monogamous with the dark side.
Well, and just a plus one on that too. I think that was something I learned through in bringing so many people into the D&D community through the podcast, but also through our marketing efforts around Dungeons and Dragons. And it's something I mentioned in the book, but Matthew Mercer, who is in many ways one of the most recognizable figures in the D&D community, if you know, you know, as a voice actor. And he was in one of our first events that we ran in Seattle, where we brought some of these folks who were doing streaming video for the first time face to face. Like, they were like, oh my gosh, I get to meet, you know, Chris Perkins, who does stuff with the Acquisitions Incorporated. I get to meet folks from across the pond. Mark Humes from High Rollers was there. And Matthew Mercer said, like, wow, I don't think I've ever been with this many people who all have imposter syndrome. And for him to say that at the top of his, you know, game at the time, really was eye-opening for me. Like, I will never forget that, because everyone around him, including people who you know, have the respect of their peers and everything, were like, holy shit, yeah, we are, you know, I didn't think this was possible. I didn't even think we would, I should be here, like, and recognized in quite this way. And we get that every week when people come on Dragon Talk still. They're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you invited us to tell their experience and talk through it. And I love that. I love that idea that we're all, think we're pulling the wool over everyone's eyes out there. And there is something about D&D players that do that a little bit more on the regular, I think, because we do that each time we sit down at the table. We're always putting on a different face. We're always pretending to be the impetuous adventurers that we are embodying. I think, just plus one what Shelley said, I think if we did that more in our lives, you know, that's you might roll a 20.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah. It's crazy and heartbreaking how often that comes up in these conversations that I have, that people suffer from imposter syndrome or some version of that. You know, I think Roseanne Cash in the very first interview I did for this brought it up. And I'm thinking of all the incredible stuff she's done as a musician, as an activist, as a mom, as a writer, and for her to not see how great she is. You know, but maybe that's part of it, right? Maybe these people that really are so great, maybe a lack of vanity is part of why they are so great. Maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
I will recommend to folks, if they want to work backwards, one of my very first maybe dozen guests on the podcast was Chris Perkins, who's the head cheese over there at Wizards of the Coast D&D World.
Right. Lead story architect, who is, I think, the longest tenured member of the design team, making D&D happen for many decades.
Boy, yeah. It makes sense. And it's a great interview. But this has been a great interview. And I'm really grateful that you guys gave me the time today. And I think people are going to love this. I hope that we can bring a few people into the fold. And I really appreciate talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, this was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate being here.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.